Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance.
Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Yes. Together we will, with Allah's help, remake the world. And the music in the background, that was Wilmore Siddiqui, our brother. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. My name is William Kareem, and you are listening to Tuesday morning programming right here on American Muslim 360, The Lives of the Prophets. Unfortunately, well, we had some problems last week, and we weren't able to get on because of some problems with our platform, Blog Talk Radio. So I'm going to just basically do a reminder, and we were talking about... Well, this is where we'll start. We'll start with what the Quran says as a reminder. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. And remember our slaves, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, remember, Abraham had a son. His name was Isaac. Okay, so that's what Allah is telling us. And then Isaac had a son, and his name was Jacob. So it says, remember our slaves, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, all owners of strength in worshiping us and also of religious understanding. Verily, we did choose them by granting them a good thing, the remembrance of the home in the hereafter, and they used to make the people remember it. Very important. And also, they used to invite the people to obey Allah and to do good deeds for the hereafter. And they are in our sight verily of the chosen and the best. And then this ayat says, and remember Ishmael, Elisha, and Dhul Kafil, all are among the best. Now, Ishmael was also a son of Abraham. We should remember that. So it's obvious that they're saying that Ishmael's progeny had Elisha and Dhul Kafil, or all are among the best. And if you want to know where that's from Surah 38, verse 45 through 48. So Ibn Ishaq said that Elisha, which was one of the progeny of Ishmael, was sent to the children. Elisha, peace be upon him, was sent to the children after Elijah. Okay, so maybe I'm wrong about this. Because Elisha, it says, was sent to the children. So they, it seems like they're talking about the children of Israel. So Elisha was sent to the children after Elijah. He lived among his people, calling them to Allah and abiding by the message and laws of Elijah until he passed away. Then dissension rose among them, and events took momentum. Sin increased everywhere, and the tyrants increased and killed the prophets. I mention this because you know what the situation that we have today in the Middle East, or we should say in Palestine, in that land that is now Israel and Palestine, or Israel and the Gaza Strip. According to Al-Hafiz, it was said that he was the cousin of Elijah. Other sources say also that he had been hiding with Elijah in a cave in Mount Qisim to escape from the king of Baalabek or whatever. And when Elijah died, Elisha succeeded him as a prophet. We mentioned this before. So the state of the Israelites, or the children of the people of the book, the people of the book are always also called the Israelites. Why? Well, because they were the ones who collected the books of the prophets. Okay, and so they, and you know that the collection of books is also called the Bible. Okay, so when you talk about the people of the book, you know, it's talking about the people who were mentioned in the Bible, or the people who left all that information together that was gathered together, and, you know, they remembered it. So Ibn Jarrah reported that the condition of the Israelites deteriorated. They committed many sins and killed whom they wished of the prophets. Consequently, now listen to this. Consequently, Allah sent them a tyrannous king who ill-treated them and spilled their blood and set their enemies from outside against them as well. They used to go to war, taking with them the Ark of the Covenant. They did this so that they would be victorious by its blessings, and it became a symbol of calm and a relic left behind by Moses, the people. When they went to war with the people of Gaza and Ashkelon, they were defeated because the Ark of the Covenant was captured from them. When the king of the Israelites heard of this, he died on the spot. Now, you see, Gaza is mentioned in here. So we're talking about what's going on today is happening on sacred land, historical land, spiritual land, land where that has historical significance according to what happened with the prophets. So we continue. The children of Israel remained like sheep without a shepherd until Almighty Allah sent them a prophet named Samuel, peace be upon him. They asked him to appoint a king over them to lead a war against their enemies. So why do I mention this? The story mentions this, so there's something that you should understand, that the children of Israel, the people of Israel, did not fight to claim the land that they are on now. They didn't fight for it. It was a political move that happened that the United Kingdom or England and the United Nations decided that Israel should have part of Palestine. So there was no fight for it. It wasn't like it wasn't conquered on that basis. It was a political move. And it was backed by the United States, and it was backed by Western countries. Okay? So that's how they actually got the land Israel today. It wasn't a fight. Okay? They were given the land. And the surrounding Muslim nations was that, like, yo, that's not right for y'all to just take, you know, these people's land and just give it to, you know, the people of the book, Israel. It's not right. And so there's a big war that happened. Egypt got involved. Saudi Arabia got involved. And the surrounding countries of Palestine got involved. And they had this long, long war. You know, that's where you get Yasser Arafat and, it, and Sharon and all these people, because it was given to Israel, then Israel had to fight to keep it, okay? And so now that's the situation that you still have. But what Israel actually did was what they did is they surrounded the Gaza Strip or Palestine, the rest of Palestine that had the Muslims in it. They surrounded them by, you know, barbed wire and everything else. And you know, so it's like you can't go to the Gaza Strip. You can't go to that part without going through Israel. All the food, electricity, you know, everything is controlled by Israel. You know, that's the only way that food and everything gets to the Gaza Strip. Also, the Gaza Strip is on the, let me see, I don't know what it is. I think it's the sea. I think it's the sea. That is on the sea. And the Israelites also control that. So nothing can even come in by water because they are patrolling that and don't allow entrance into the Gaza Strip or where the Palestinians are without, you know, having to go through Israel. So that's what the situation is today, that they are fighting to keep something that was given to them. They're fighting to keep it. They fought to conquer it. They are fighting to keep it, okay, which was something that was given to them by England with the support of the United States and other nations. But there are a lot of nations today that don't support Israel, a lot. There's a lot of nations that don't support Israel. So we should also keep that in mind. But just remember, mainstream media doesn't cover that part of it. They only cover the part that, you know, which is the support for Israel. The wonderful thing about mainstream media, well, not mainstream media, about social media, the advent of the internet is that it's a free, open space where people can tell the story about their understanding and their idea and protest that's actually going on about this situation that's going on in the Middle East, because we have to also understand that Israel also has control of the internet that goes into Gaza. And so they cut off water, they cut off electricity, they cut off the internet. So even though there are people that are there that can, you know, that have, you know, cell phones and all the rest of that can take pictures, videos and everything, it can't get out. And it can't get out because Israel has cut off access. So we, most of the time we only hear the story that comes from the Israeli side, and we don't hear the story that comes from the Palestinian side. Okay, so we continue. The children of Israel remained like sheep without a shepherd until Almighty Allah sent them a prophet named Samuel. They asked him to appoint a king over them to lead a war against their enemies. Okay, according to Ibn Askar, the Israelites believed that their Ark of the Covenant to be very holy and an important symbol of their history. They carried the Ark even in battle and believed that because of it, Allah would protect them from their enemies. This belief gave them peace of mind and great courage, and their enemies were terrified by it. Their enemies also believed that it was given special power by Allah. Gradually, the Israelites started to ignore Allah's law. Evil habits became part of their lives. Allah sent upon them an enemy, the Philistines, who defeated the Israelites, captured their ark, drove them out of their homes, and took away their children to use or sell as slaves. Their power was broken. They separated from one another and were disheartened. So human beings are very, very evil, and they get the children involved. You see what it says here. They drove them out of their homes and took away their children to use or sell them as slaves. So they took away the children, and they probably also took away the women. Samuel comes to the children of Israel. This is another part that we're going to. Then came Prophet Samuel, peace be upon him, among them to bring some relief. They asked the prophet's help in appointing a strong leader, a king under whose banner they could unite and fight the Philistines. Prophet Samuel, knowing their weakness, told them, "I fear that when the time comes to fight, you may refuse." But they assured him that they had suffered enough insults and were now ready to fight in the way of Allah, even if they lost their lives. Okay. Prophet Samuel prayed to Allah for guidance. Allah revealed to him that he had chosen one, Saul, to be their king. The prophet wanted to know how to recognize the future king. So Samuel wanted to know how to recognize Saul, or Talit, that was his name also. In English they call him Saul, in Arabic they call him Talit. The prophet wanted to know how to recognize the future king. He was told that Saul would come to him by himself and that they should hand over the control of the kingdom to him, where he would lead them to battle against the Philistines. So now the Israelites are looking for, you know, a king to take control and lead them against the Philistines. So Saul is appointed king. Saul was tall and sturdy, pious and very intelligent. He lived and worked with his father on their farm. One day, several of their donkeys were lost. According to his servant, Saul went to search of them. They traveled for many days and were very tired. So now we're talking about Saul, the one who's supposed to be the future king, all right? Because we're talking about Samuel. Samuel is looking for him, and so this is what they're talking about, you know, as far as Saul is concerned. Saul said to his servant, "Let us rather go back, for I'm sure that my father will be worried by now, but the other animals must also be cared for." His servant suggested that as they were already in the land of Samuel, the prophet, they should go to him and inquire about the lost donkeys. I'm telling you what the story says in this, The Lives of the Prophets. Saul agreed, and they carried on. On their way, they asked directions from some maidens carrying water. They were told to go in the direction of the mountain. Here, a vast crowd was waiting for the prophet Samuel. When Saul set eyes on him, okay, Saul, the future king, he instantly recognized him as a prophet by his holy men. Samuel also recognized Saul as the king that Allah had chosen for them. Saul greeted the prophet respectfully. When he asked about his missing donkeys, Samuel told him not to worry. His donkeys were already on their way back to his father's farm. He then told Saul, so we're talking about Samuel told Saul, that Allah had chosen him as the king of the children of Israel. His duty would be to take charge of their affairs, to unite them under one banner, and to protect them from their enemies. If he carried out Allah's command, he would be given victory. Saul was surprised by this sudden honor offered to him. It was also a heavy responsibility. He protested to the prophet that he was of the children of Benjamin. Now, remember who Benjamin is. Benjamin was the brother of Yosef. Okay? So, remember who Benjamin was. He protested to the prophet that he was that he was of the children of Benjamin, the least famous of the tribe of Jacob. Remember who Jacob was. Jacob was from the lines of Isaac. Isaac was the son of Abraham. So Abraham's son was Isaac, and Isaac had a son named Jacob, who then had a son named Yosef and Benjamin. He did not know anything of leadership or kingship and had no wealth. He was just Saul. So Samuel told him it was the will of Allah that he should be king, that he should then thank Allah for his favor and to be strong in faith. Now, this is what Samuel told Saul. So Saul is appointed king. This is the Quranic verse. Taking Saul by the hand, Samuel asked him, wait a minute. This says Saul is appointed king, Quranic, okay? So someplace in here we're going to hear it. Taking Saul by the hand, Samuel led him to the children of Israel, but they insisted on a direct sign from Allah. We can talk about the children of Israel, as they always do, insist on a direct sign of Allah. Prophet Samuel told them to go outside the city and to see the sign, which they did, Almighty Allah revealed. Have you not thought about the group of children of Israel after the time of Musa, when they said to the prophets of theirs, appoint for us a king, and we will fight in Allah's way? He said, would you then refrain from fighting if fighting was prescribed for you? They said, why should we not fight in Allah's way while we have been driven out of our homes and our children, families have also been taken captives? But when fighting was ordered for them, they turned away. Talking about the children, Israel turned away. All except a few of them. And Allah is all aware of the polytheists and wrongdoers. And their prophet Samuel said to them, indeed, Allah has appointed Saul as a king over you. They said, how can he be a king over us when we are better fitted than him for the kingdom? He has not been given enough wealth. Okay, we got this wealth thing again. It happened, you know, this is the same thing that the Pharaoh said to Moses. He don't even have a gold bracelet. So he said, verily Allah has chosen him, talking about Samuel said, verily Allah has chosen him above you and has increased him abundantly in knowledge and stature, and Allah grants his kingdom to whom he wills, and Allah is all sufficient for his creatures, needs all and knows. And the prophet said to them, have you not thought about the group of the children of Israel after the time of Musa, when they said to a prophet of theirs, appoint for us the king, and he was fighting in Allah's way. He said, would you then refrain? You know, this seems like to be a repeat, but I'm going to read it anyway, because this is how it's written. Appoint for us the king, and we will fight in Allah's way. He said, would you then refrain from fighting? If fighting was prescribed for you, they said, why should we not fight in Allah's way while we have been driven out of our homes and our children? Families have been taken as captives, but when fighting was ordered for them, they turned away. And their prophet Samuel said to them, indeed, I have appointed. Okay, this is how it reads. And indeed, verily Allah has chosen him above you and has increased him abundantly in knowledge and stature. Only Allah grants his kingdom to whom he wills, and Allah is all sufficient for his creatures, needs, all, and Noah. He's all Noah. And this prophet, Samuel, and their prophet, Samuel, said to them, verily, the signs of his kingdom is that there shall come to you a wooden box, wherein is Sakinah, peace and assurance from your Lord, and a remnant of that which Musa and Harun left behind, carried by the angels. Verily, and this is a sign for you if you are indeed believers. Now, this is Surah 2, verse 246 to 250. So, continuing, Saul leads an army. Okay, so Samuel, remember, Samuel appointed Saul. Saul leads an army. Then when Saul set out with the army, he said, verily, Allah will try you at a river. So we remember this. If you've read the Quran, then you've heard this. Verily, Allah will try you at a river. So whoever drinks thereof, he is not of me. And whoever tastes for it, he is of me, except him who takes thereof in the hollow of his hand. Yet they drank thereof, all except a few of them. So when he had crossed it, the river, he and those who believed with him, they said, we have no power over this day against Goliath and his host. But those who knew with certainty, but those who knew with certainty that they were to meet their Lord said, how often a small group overcame a mighty host by Allah's leave, and Allah is with the patient. So this is from Quran. I recognize this. And when they advanced to meet Goliath and his forces, they invoked, quote, then when Talit saw, set out with the army, he said, verily, Allah will try you at the river, so whoever drinks thereof, he is not of me, and whoever tastes it, he is of me, except him who takes thereof in the hollow of his hand. Yet they drank thereof, all except a few of them. So when he had crossed it, he and those who believed with him, they said, we have no power this day against Goliath and his host. But those who knew with certainty that Allah would, they would meet their Lord, how often was a small group overcame? So, yeah. We know that if this is in the Quran, it doesn't give the quotation yet. And when they advanced to meet Goliath and his forces, they invoked, our Lord, pour us forth on us patience and make us victorious over the disbelieving people. So Saul leads the army. Saul set about organizing his army with strong faith and wisdom. He ordered that only men free from responsibility should join. They engaged in building homes, men who were about to be married, and those occupied with business should not join. After establishing a well-trained army, he decided to put them to the test. He told them that along the route they would pass a river, and then we're going to go through this again. To his disappointment, he discovered the majority of the men drank more water than they should have. He discharged them for disobedience and kept only the few who had obeyed him, and they were the only ones who proved their sincerity. This resulted in a split in the army, but he was not bothered. Talking about Saul, was not bothered by this. He believed in quality and not numbers. Better a small band of true believers. He should rely on them, a huge army of unreliable men. Even W.D. Muhammad said the same thing. After he took over from his father's, when his father passed, that there were a lot of people who followed Honorable Nasir Elijah Muhammad that fell off from following Imam W.D. Muhammad. And I guess that Imam W.D. Muhammad is a study of Quran, understood this, that the result of the split in the army, and he was not bothered. He believed in quality and not numbers. Better a small band of true believers he could rely on than a huge army of unreliable men. So let us remember that and reflect on that with our own circumstance and situation as far as being Muslims and believers. And those who transition from following the Honorable Master Elijah Muhammad to following Imam W.D. Muhammad, we understood the fall off. We understood the fall off, and we understood when Imam W.D. Muhammad said that. So Saul's army seized the enemy. Saul's men sighted the enemy on the other side of the river. Their opponents appeared physically strong and were armed with better weapons. They were led by the mighty warrior Goliath, known for his huge build and brute strength. A great number of Saul's men ran away on seeing this strong force. The small band then remained, was willing to fight, whatever the outcome, for they had heard that there had been many incidents in the past in which Allah had caused a small force to defeat a larger one. So we're going to stop right here for a moment. And what we're going to do is we're going to play APSA.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to AM 360. Join your host, Munira Habil, every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we explore relationship topics addressing what we didn't know, what we've learned, and what we need to know and why. Because on this show, it's all about courtship and marriage.
Yes, courtship and marriage. That's today. Today, Tuesday, that's today at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also, I'd like to remind you that today from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. will be the on the platform, A New Day Community Radio, will be Why Muslim Americans Don't Want to Get Married, and we will explore some of the social situations and conditions that not only men face and women face as far as marriages, not only marriage, but as far as our social circumstance here in America. Why is it that, you know, we don't socialize enough? Ask the question, why is it that the buildings that we have around the country, that's known as masjids, that we have around the country, why they're not being used enough for social situations where men and women can actually get together with different programs and socialize with each other as opposed to socializing on social media or having to pay in other buildings, go to the movies or go out to restaurants that are not owned by Muslims or people in our community, I should say, that because there's a lot of restaurants that are owned by Muslims. And they are clocking dough just as much as they're clocking dough. They are making a lot of money. And one of the things they do is, you know, what they do is they put the word halal on their business. It's halal. And so we go in and we spend our money with them, but that money doesn't serve our community. That's the point I'm making. They're Muslim. Yeah, alhamdulillah. That they're Muslim, but what we want to do is we want to socialize more. So these are some of the ideas that we're going to explore on why Muslim Americans don't want to get married, and take care of that. That'll be from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time today, Tuesday. And then the other part that I'm going to tell you, since we talked about American Muslim 360, today's Tuesday. They have on IWDN Radio Science and Health Learning Lab with Rashid Salam. That's on today, Tuesday at 7 p.m. also. So there's a lot of platforms where that are talking about your community, our community, the community of Imam W.D. Muhammad, which is important that we, you know, we are making efforts, and these efforts that are being made by believers in our community that we support them. Meanwhile, back at the ranch or back at the story, as we said, you know, after a great number of Saul's men ran away or seeing this strong force, the small band that remained was willing to fight, whatever the outcome, for they had heard that there had been incidents in the past in which Allah had caused a small force to defeat a larger one. Of course. So Prophet Dawood, we get to Dawood, Prophet David. Okay, so this is when. So, you know, there has been much that has been in mainstream media, you know, movies about Prophet David and Goliath. David and Goliath. David and Goliath. Okay, but this is how you can see how the whole thing came about. It came about because, remember, Prophet Samuel was in a position where, you know, like he needed a leader from the army, and he recognized Saul, and Saul was a descendant of Benjamin, who was a descendant of Jacob, okay? But, you know, but Saul didn't believe. Saul was like, I'm not from the side of Houston. I'm from the side of Benjamin. Benjamin didn't do anything that was all that great. And Samuel said, look, you're the one. And so, you know, Saul decided to take up the challenge. So now, here it is. Here it is. This is the circumstance and situation. We got to look at this. Saul's men sighted the enemy on the other side of the river. Their opponents appeared physically stronger and were armed with better weapons. They were led by the mighty Goliath, known for his huge build and strength and brute strength. A great number of Saul's men ran away on seeing this strong force. Now, I'm talking, look, imagine this. The small band that remained was willing to fight whatever the outcome, for they had heard that there had been many incidents in the past when which Allah had caused a small force to defeat a larger one. Now, you know, many of y'all know where I'm going with it. Y'all know where I'm going, but I got to read it. Okay, so David challenges Goliath. When the two armies faced each other, Goliath challenged any soldier from King Saul's army to single combat. And as was the custom of battle in those days, Goliath also wanted to show off his strength. The men were terrorized, and no one had enough courage to volunteer. The king offered the hand of his pretty daughter in marriage to the man who would fight Goliath. But even this tempting offer did not change the deadly silence among his soldiers. Oh, man. Can you imagine? Then, to everyone's surprise, a youth stepped, a roar of laughter echoed from the enemy side, and even Saul's men shook their heads. Can you imagine? The young man was David, from the city of Bethlehem. His elderly father had chosen three of his sons to join Saul's army. He had instructed the youngest one, David, not to take part in the fighting, but to help the army in other ways and to report to his father daily on what was happening on the war front. Although Saul was very impressed by the youth's courage, he said, I admire your courage. This is what Saul says to little young David. He said, I admire your courage, but you are not no match for this mighty warrior. Let the strong man come forward. David, however, had already decided and was willing to meet the challenge. Now you know why. Because he knew how he could take this man out. All of this time that David is growing up, we're talking about David now. This is not in the reading. But we know historically, if we look at this historically, let us remember how Musa had been prepared years before he was given the mission to go up against Pharaoh by his mother, be inspired to put him in the river. Years before he actually became a prophet. So let us remember that whole transition that happened with Moses, how he was, he was supposed to do what he did. So let us, you know, take that same circumstance with David. David is just you. He's playing around, you know, he's got a slingshot and rocks, you know, like, and he's playing with his thing, slingshot and rocks, hitting birds out the sky or, you know, hitting animals or anyone is trying to mess around with the sheep. you know, he's a, you know, helping his father, you know, and, you know, like he's taking a slingshot and putting rocks in it and, you know, throwing it at the wolf that might try to, you know, come and, you know, get the flock, and then the wolf goes, and runs away. So this is something that, and he probably got pretty good at it because, you know, with practice comes perfection. So he probably got pretty good at it. So when Saul says to him, was very impressed by the youth's courage, but there was something that the youth knew. The youth knew what he could do. He said, I admire your courage, but you are no match for the mighty warrior. Because Saul didn't know that he was that good with a slingshot. Let the strong men come forward, said Saul. David, however, had already decided and was willing to meet the challenge. So proudly, he told the king that only the day before he had killed a lion, which had threatened his father's sheep. You see? And then on another occasion, he had killed a bear. He asked Saul not to judge him by his appearance, for he feared no man or wild beast. You see that? With a slingshot and rocks. He had been prepared for this day. And that's what he told him. And like I said, I just said, you know, like the wolf, but man, it was a lion. Man, he killed a lion that had threatened his father's sheep. And on another occasion, he killed a bear with a slingshot and rocks. A slingshot and rocks, he killed him. So he asked Saul not to judge him by appearance. Now, we're talking about a youth. Well, he feared no man or wild beast. Saul, surprised by young David's brave stance, agreed. My brave soldier, if you are willing then may Allah guard you and grant you strength. Can you imagine? Now, look at this. So now you got two armies. You got the Philistines army, and you got the Israelites army, which is small. Okay, you got this young man that comes forth out of, you know, the Philistines. You know, because Goliath, yo, who will fight me? Who will fight me? I'm big Goliath. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who want to fight me? He's big. He's strong. He's been in many battles. So, you know, like he's got this big confidence, arrogance, everything else, man. So the king, so now David and Goliath fight. So the king dressed David in a battle armor and handed him a sword. But David was not used to wearing battle dress. He felt uncomfortable in it, and it obstructed his movement. He removed the armor, then collected a few pebbles and filled his leather pouch with them. He slung it over his shoulder next to his sling. With his wooden staff in hand, he began to walk toward the enemy. Can you imagine? Just imagine this. I mean, you've seen the movie. Saul was worried and asked him, how on earth with a sling and a couple of stones was he going to defend himself against this giant? And David replied, Allah, who protected me from the claws of the bear and the fangs of the lion, will certainly protect me from this brute. That's a heck of a prayer. That's a heck of a reassurance right there. David replied, look at the faith that had been built up in this young man. Allah, who protected. Now, he didn't say, I defeated the bear. I defeated the lion. He didn't say that. Remember what he said. He said, Allah, who protected me from the claws of the bear and the fangs of the lion, will certainly protect me from this brute. When Goliath set eyes on this lean young man, reading the story, when Goliath set eyes on this lean young man who looked like a boy, he laughed loudly and roared, are you out to play war with one of your playmates? Or are you tired of life? This is the assurance that Goliath had. I will simply cut off your head with one swipe of my sword. David shouted back, "You may have armor, shield, and a sword, but I face you in the name of Allah, the Lord of the Israelites, whose laws you have mocked. Today you will see that it is not the sword that kills, but the will and power of Allah." Isn't that something? Whew. Man. Now, this is a young man. You know, he faced a lion. He faced a bear. It's like, so, you know, like, why wouldn't he be able to face a man? That's what he's saying. But he's given the power to Allah. He's not going out there in the name of David. He's going out there in the name of Allah, with the assistance of Allah. And he says, today you will see. This is what he says to Goliath. Today you will see it is not the sword that kills, but the will and power of Allah. So saying, he took his sling and placed it in a pebble from his pouch. He swung and aimed it at Goliath. The pebble shot from the whirling sling with the speed of an arrow and hit Goliath's head with a great force. Blood gushed out, and Goliath thumped to the ground lifeless before he had a chance to draw his sword. When the rest of his men saw this mighty hero slain, they took to their heels. The Israelites followed in hot pursuits, taking revenge for their years of suffering at the hands of their enemy, killing every soldier they could lay hands on. In this battle, the Israelites regained the glory and honor they had been lost for a long time. So you know what, see? Let us also imagine and realize that many a times the people that were behind Goliath really were depending on Goliath and Goliath's power. They weren't really depending on their power. They might have had strong, they might have had, you know, been many men. They had all of this, you know, like they had fine dress. They were dressed up, you know, real nice. They had real, you know, fine swords and weapons. But they didn't really have belief. And the one who that they depended on was Goliath. So all the power was really in Goliath. So when Goliath thumped to the ground, it was like the power of their army, you know, just was lost. Because the men that was behind Goliath didn't have no faith, they had no trust, they didn't believe, and they ran away. They started to run away. But the Israelites, now remember, we're talking about the Israelites now that was with Saul, who had been tested. Remember, they were tested at these we're talking about Saul's army. Was tested at the river. He said, if you drink, you know, you're not coming with me. But the ones that didn't drink, those were the ones that went with him. So these were believers. They had been tested. And remember, when these believers saw Goliath and his army, I mean, you know, so which one of y'all going to come forward and fight and go up against Goliath? Nobody volunteered. Because that's what Saul was looking for. Saul was looking for a volunteer. And none of them volunteered. But among them was a young man who played with a sling and stones, who knew how to defeat the giant. Now I'm sure that he didn't have no intention. This young man, he had no intention of going up against Goliath. That wasn't in his intention. Like, he was doing what his father said. Listen, just go again to support them, give them water, you know, and then report back to me how everything is going with them. But when he saw the situation, when Saul, King Saul, told them, well, who's going to volunteer to go up against Goliath? Goliath came out to the middle of the field. Said, yeah, you know, send out your best man. Yo, I'm ready. You know, like, let's make it happen. Let's do it. And here it is. Nobody volunteered. But little David, the one with the slingshot, he saw how he could defeat Goliath. He saw how he could defeat Goliath. Now remember, Saul didn't even know about David. He didn't even know about him. Because David was just there among the believers. He was just there among the believers, you know, trying to help them out to do this, to do that, And, you know, it was like when he saw, when King Saul said to him, who will step up? And when little David saw that they, you know, nobody stepped up, he understood why. He's a big dude. Goliath was a big dude. But now he was inspired by the creator of the heavens and the earth, the one who allowed him as little David to exist just for this purpose, the one who was practicing, the one who guarded his father's sheep, the one who was tested by a bear, the one who was tested by a lion. Little David didn't know that this was going to happen to him. He didn't know. But when the situation presented himself, he had the vision. He had the foresight. And he knew what to do to get to defeat Goliath. And he did it with the assistance of Allah. He said so. He said, today you will see that it is not the sword that kills, but the will and power of Allah. Bang. Whoo. As a matter of fact, in quotations it says, you may have armor, shields, and a sword, but I face you in the name of Allah, the Lord of the Israelites, whose laws you have mocked. Today you will see that it is not the sword that kills, but the will and power of Allah. With certainty this young man spoke those words, because he knew what he could do. Saul didn't know it, and Goliath definitely didn't know it. Goliath already had in his mind. He said, you know what? You know, they're going to send out a man, you know, that's going to have a sword or is going to have some bow and arrows, you know, and I'm going to be able to defeat them. But he never, you know, he never decided. You know, it's like this little kid comes out with some pebbles and a slingshot. Hey, come on, man. I'm going to get this done real quick. So that was the situation with basically, I think that, you know, we said a lot with that. And then, of course, the next time what we're going to do is we're going to talk about Allah gives David the kingdom. Almighty Allah declared in Quran. So they routed them by Allah's leave, and David killed Goliath. And Allah gave him, David, the kingdom after the death of Saul and Samuel and wisdom. So Allah gave him the kingdom and wisdom and taught him of that which he willed. And if Allah did not check one set of people by means of another, the earth would indeed be full of mischief. But Allah is full of bounty to mankind. Surah 2, verse 251. Now, what is important about this here? I got a couple of minutes left, but I need to say this. That remember, in the very beginning of the human being, you know, with Adam being in heaven, that Allah asked the angels a question. He said, you know, I'm about to create a vice chairman on earth. And what did the angels reply? Are you going to create one to shed blood and make mischief? So those are the two elements, shed blood and make mischief. But what was Adam's saving quality? Adam's saving quality is that when he made a mistake, he turned and repented to the creator of the heavens and the earth. When he made a mistake, he turned and repented to the creator of the heavens and the earth. That even though Adam was given everything in the kingdom, that it was possible for Adam to make a mistake. And that's why, and this is, you know, William Kareem's interpretation, that's why the tree was placed in paradise. The tree was placed in paradise to test Adam, because Allah knew that eventually he would eat from it. But what would he do after he ate? You see, because you got everything, but you always want that which, the way that a human being is, you want that which you don't have. So here it is, you in the garden, you got everything. You got everything, and here it is, you know, the tree is there, and we will go over that at another time, because I only got 3 minutes left in the program, and it's important that I go ahead and play a PSA. But I wanted to thank you, brothers and sisters, for being with me today here on The Lives of the Prophets. I always enjoy this, and I hope you do too. Tell your friends about it, because we've been doing this since the beginning of the year, and the year is almost over. But it looks like this is going to actually go into the next year. And we'll be doing fundraising soon. So we hope that you find, you know, American Muslim 360, New Day Community Radio, IWDM Radio. Look, you know, we're on a platform that requires money for us to be here. This is not a free situation that we are on here. This is not free, you know. And, you know, I'm on here for an hour on American Muslim 360. I have a platform that, you know, today, you know, is going to be on for 3 hours. You know, we do 3 hours a day where we talk about Islam and the community, Imam W.D. Muhammad. We talk about that for 3 hours a day, from 10 to 1. For 3 hours a day, that's what we do. And it's open to the community. So if you have something that's going on in your community, you can come on American Muslim 360. You can come on IWDM Radio. You can come on New Day Community Radio and talk about it. It's support. You know, show your support for that. Show your support for these media outlets that we're trying to work with. Right? So, look, this is what I'm going to do. I thank you so very much for being with me today here on Lives of the Prophets, and I hope to see you at 10 o'clock. Please join me at 10 o'clock and so that we can talk about some of the other ideas that's going on, you know, in our culture here in America and around the world. And with that, we're going to go out with this, the female solution, Naima Latif and Iman.
Join us live every Wednesday morning from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time with host Naima Latif and yours truly, Imam Kareem Hamid, presenting the female solution. We look forward to your presence. Assalamu alaikum.
Family, community, city, state, country, and more. Everything starts with you, the individual, you. What is the character of you? Are you a book? Can you be read? Join us every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a wonderful hour of information being shared by you, with you, for you, the you in all of us. I am Martha Naila Abdullah, and I am your host for Community Developmental Stages. Again, every Friday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., be there.